Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Studerstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for December 2nd, 2014. It is Tuesday. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we didn't quite have the excitement in the gold market today, but with the big turnaround we saw in both gold and silver, of course, I think today's numbers are, very
modern.
Absolutely, we have gold down $1,350 at $1,200.
Silver, what?
Yeah, not
43
bad.
43 yesterday.
Yeah. Silver up two at $1,658. Platinum was down 21 at $1,220. And palladium was down 5 at 8.05. The USDX today, I didn't get a chance to follow much of these numbers today. People taking advantage of the action in the markets. The dollar index today, 0.64 to the upside, 88.61. So not a bad move, and considering the big run in the index today compared to little 13 to the downside on gold, not bad. You also had crude oil down 1.73 at 67.27. Paper markets today. The Dow. Oh, I didn't see this. The early morning trade, the Dow was down, but we're looking at 102. Up 102 on the Dow, 17,879. Oh, you can't have a $45 move or $70 move in gold, to where everybody would talk about it. Not a good day in the Dow. We had to have a good day in the Dow. The Nasdaq up 28 at 47.55. The S&P up 13 at 2,066. 10-year yield 0.07 to the upside at 2.28% yield. So,
yeah.
Well, now that we have Black Friday over, we have Cyber Monday over. I pulled
and
up some
Monday and Friday. That leaves Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday.
I pulled up some numbers, doing some year-end numbers on the U.S. Treasury for the Silver Eagles and Gold Eagles. It truly looks like this will be a record year for Silver Eagles. Last year, there was $42,675,000, and we're currently at $42,070,000 for Silver Eagle. So it almost likely will surpass 2013 for a record year for Silver Eagles. Gold, on the other hand, is actually the lowest since 2008. So I found that interesting, although...
Lowest volume.
Mm-hmm.
Lowest number of ounces sold.
Yeah. Hmm. Right now we're currently at 521,000. Last year it was 856. 2012 was 753. And then for the three earlier years, they were all over a million ounces. And the biggest banner was 2009, with 1.4 million ounces of gold. And, of course, that was right at the peak of the financial situation, the subprime loans and so forth. So, interesting. I was actually surprised that we had the 856. I thought it was a little bit lower last year for 856,000.
Yeah, silver are we talking about right now?
Gold. That is gold.
Oh, gold, all right.
Yeah, for 2013. So, hey, we can still do 300,000 gold eagles. We got 4 weeks.
Save them till next year.
But
sorry, we don't have to buy them all this year. We can buy some next year too.
But I think that is really in tune to the lower prices that we've seen in silver this year. People took advantage of the low prices in silver. So
somebody did. And that's one of the questions. Who is buying the silver? Is it mom and pop, or is it financial institutions, foreign nations? Who's buying the silver? That would be at least as interesting. Knowing that would be at least as interesting as knowing how much they've purchased altogether.
Because you know what's really interesting? And of course, these are the numbers with the prices dropping so significantly since 2012. The peak prior to, in 2009, at the height of the financial crisis, there was 28 million Silver Eagles sold. Then in 2010 was 34, and I'm just rounding these numbers out. They were a little bit higher. On 11, they were 39 million, and then 2012, they were 33 million. So then they popped to 42. Once that price started to drop, we went from 33 million to 42. So in 1 year, that's quite a gain.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary change. And well, it indicates how much people are, they really are more interested in it. I mean, at least for the moment, it appears that they're more interested in buying silver than gold. And they do that because right now I think the ratio is 75 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. Isn't that true?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, something like that. Well, it's about as high as it's ever been. A lot of people think the natural ratio between silver and gold is somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 1, maybe even 30 to 1. And they anticipate that the time is coming when there will be a massive correction. And the correction will put gold, or excuse me, it will reestablish a 20 or 30 ounces of gold to 20 or 30 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. It'll restore that ratio. And if it does, the profits to be made in silver will be spectacular. I'm not convinced that's true, however. A lot of people think it's going back in the neighborhood of 20, sometimes even below that. I mean, there was a point in time prior to 1933, it was 16 to 1. 16 ounces of silver for 1 ounce of gold.
And that was a different time, different world.
It was a different time, I get that. But some people believe we're going to see that again. It's not good evidence, but it's evidence, just the same. It's not proof, but it's evidence that when they put the gold eagles out, we've identified the gold eagle as $50 and the silver eagle as $1, which means they anticipate a 50 to 1 ratio. I don't think they pulled that number out of the hat. I don't think they came up with that just by throwing darts at a wall, at a bunch of numbers on the wall, and said, well, what shall the ratio be? And they said, let's do 50 to 1. I think maybe there's a point to it. And I don't have any evidence to support it. I have just a suspicion. But I think in the end, we're going to see the silver goes back to something like a 50-to-1 ratio, which will still be a big profit for silver. But it won't be the same as going to 16-to-1 or 20-to-1 or 30-to-1. It won't be as big as a lot of people anticipate. Still a good deal. Maybe not as good as there's some hope for, but you know, we'll watch and see.
Well, I think what we're going to see, if folks stick to the fundamentals of gold and silver and buy accordingly, I think they'll both do extremely well.
Oh,
it's when people purchase one item over the other in hopes of capturing those huge, huge gains. I think this is where sometimes their portfolios become a little distorted and heavy in one area, and you're not taking advantage of the fundamentals of each. Silver's gotten a little watered down because it has become an industrial metal. So it's a little more difficult to gauge how it's going to perform during these, you know, when we have the downturns on the economies. But then again, you have all the pollution problems, the environmental problems that use the white metals and so forth. So that could overcome a lot. So that you have a lot more volatility in something. When people are buying for a long-term investment, they want to look to carry something that has a little less volatility. And so, folks, you got to remember on these fundamentals. And Murray wrote in, he says he thinks that the poor gold, silver sales and higher silver eagle sales are a direct reflection on how poorly the economy is doing. Folks who usually buy metals are running low on funds, and silver is easier on the wallet. And I do disagree a little bit, Murray, because I think that might be part of it. But people that have the money, guess where their money is at? It's not so much that the economy is doing so poorly that reflect people who have money and the ability to make more money. Their money right now is in paper. Their money right now is in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And that's where they prefer to be. And this is where all your financial planners have that money. And it will take some sort of a drop in the stock market, some sort of another fiasco in order for them to say, gee, you know, maybe I need to take some of that money out of paper and put it into gold. And that will happen. It's just, you know, we don't know what that event will be. We don't know what it will be or when it will be. But that event is certainly getting a little bit closer. And that day of reckoning of the way this country's finances have been handled and we talked about it yesterday, and I think we're going to talk a little bit more about it today, about our debt.
The debt, yeah. It's, you know, for me, this whole thing is simple.
It is.
And it's I can't give you an exact date when the stuff's going to hit the fan, but I'm able to reach the conclusion that it's going to hit the fan, and it primarily because of the debt. And in fact, I had an article. Here's one right. As a matter of fact, here it is right here. Now, this is interesting. This is interesting. It's not necessarily solid evidence, but it's interesting. U.S. debt clock surges past $18 trillion. According to ZeroHedge.com, last week, total U.S. debt was $17,963,000,000,000. And he goes through the numbers. $17,963,000,000,000 plus change. 2 days later, Black Friday, total outstanding U.S. public debt has just hit a new historical level, surpassing $18 trillion for the first time, or $18,005,000,000,000 plus change. Of which the debt held by the public is almost $13 trillion. And this is an increase, according to ZeroHedge.com, of $32 billion in the national debt in one day. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Because a $32 billion increase in the national debt means the daily increase of right about $100 for every man, woman, and child in this country. If you average that debt out, $32 billion, divided by the population, 317 million, you wind up with right about $100. You folks, each of you, went $100 deeper into debt last Friday as your fair share of the national debt. Now, $100 doesn't sound like much, but that translates in, if it continued at that rate, that would be about $36,500 per person per year. Now, I hope that each of you receive or do receive a $36,500 raise this year, because you know who the government and its creditors expect to pay the national debt. The answer, of course, is the great unwashed, the American public, the little people, the taxpayers, the chumps who are dumb enough to trust the government. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, they're talking about you and me are earmarked to pay that debt. But very few of us received or will receive a $36,000 annual raise. Thus, we aren't going to be able to repay that portion of the national debt that's incurred over just the next 12 months. Understand, we're not going to be able to pay that. It's not that we aren't going to be able to pay the $18 trillion that's already there. We're not going to be able to pay what we even run up this next year, at least if it continues at the rate of $32 billion a day. All right? More. $36,500 increase in the national debt is the amount of new debt reduced to a per capita number. That's how much Melody would come. Her fair share would be $36,500. My share would be $36,500. And each year's your fair shares would be $36,500. But if we take that same $32 billion daily debt and presume that rate will continue for the net balance of the next 12 months, that works out to an extra $12 trillion in national debt added to the current $18 trillion national debt. Now, those are fascinating numbers. We're hypothesizing here. We're just speculating around. But in theory, those are fascinating numbers because they mean that either one, at last year's rate of increase, or last week's rate of increase, $32 billion per day, the $18 trillion national debt currently recognized officially by the government would grow by about 65% over the next year, a percentage that's impossible to sustain, justify, or pay. There's no way the government's running up 65%, increasing the national debt by 65% in a single year. That isn't going to happen. No way. Can't be. Now, the second option is that the current national debt is far greater than the $18 trillion the government claims. In other words, if the current national debt is about $90 trillion, as claimed by John Williams at shadowstats.com, not $18 trillion claimed by the government, $90 trillion, and if it grew by $332 billion a day or $12 trillion a year, the annual rate of increase in the national debt would only be about $12 trillion divided by $90 trillion, which works out to about 13%. That's plausible. 13% increase in the size of the national debt, nothing to sneeze at, but it could be survived. A 65% increase in the national debt would be irrational, impossible, probably signal a national economic collapse. Now, which is more likely? That the national debt is increasing at a rate of 13% per year? Or 65% a year? And the answer depends on how big is the national debt right now. The answer, if you answer the question, which is more likely, 13% or 65%, you'll have a good idea as to whether the real national debt is $18 trillion, which the government claims, or $90 trillion, as John Williams claims. My point, and it's purely speculative, and it's purely conjectural, and it's based on the presumption that if it went up $32 billion on Black Friday, the debt will go up $32 billion every day for the rest of the year. And that presumption is probably mistaken. But nevertheless, if we play with it and we explore that a little bit, if the national debt rose by $32 billion in one day last week, and if it were true that the national debt continued to rise an actual $32 billion per day for the next year, then the resulting increase in the national debt would be irrational and impossible if the current national debt was really $18 trillion, which is what the government says. But that increase would be rational and quite possible if today's real national debt were about $90 trillion. What I'm trying to say is that the numbers give us a clue to the true size of the total national debt. Right? How much is the debt going up on a daily basis? You know, what's irrational for 18,000 may be quite rational for 90 trillion. Going to take a break. commercial announcements, Alfred Addis, Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival, Hang Tough. We'll be right back.
Part of our future.
Well,
the question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, since we were speaking about silver, we have a little silver package. It includes 90% silver quarters. We have a $20 face value of the 90% silver. We have 20 Silver Eagles 2014s, they're 2014 1-ounce Silver Eagles. You have a full tube, which consists of 20 ounces, and also 20 Morgan Silver Dollars. These are pre-1921 Morgan Silver Dollars, and the total package is $1,195, and that does include your shipping. So it's a great little silver package. Started running this package last week when I was on an early morning program with Beth Ann, and people liked it, so we're going to continue it here with Discount Gold and Silver. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
You know, we're talking about debt, or trying to, in the first, and when we closed down the first segment of the program. And what I started to say was that for me, the circumstances are fairly simple. It's not too hard to understand. And it all goes back to the debt, and I'll try to just explain just that in a way that hopefully is, you know, clear. And what was eye-opening for me was 4 or 5 years ago, John Williams at shadowstats.com. I read some of his work for the first time, and I realized that the true national debt was considerably larger than what the government admitted. I don't remember what it was 5 years ago. The government might have claimed that they owed $7 trillion. Maybe they said that. Maybe they said six. I don't remember. William said, no, it's probably $30 trillion. Well, today, the government claims it's $18 trillion. William says it's closer to $90 trillion. I've seen the Congressional Budget Office numbers and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, and he says, and the Congressional Budget Office and Lawrence Kotlikoff, they say that the total national debt is over $200 trillion. Now, that is enough information where you can make a lot of powerful predictions. If you just take that much and you think about it a little bit, you can see the logic of behind buying gold. And the logic is this. If the total national debt is $18 trillion, which is what the government claims right now, that works out to around $50,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. I don't think most of you people have an extra $50,000 that you're willing to give to the government. All right? But it's not impossible. We could pay an $18 trillion national debt, especially if we were given, say, 10 years to pay it off. Could be done. It's possible. We wouldn't like it. We'd grumble. We'd moan. We'd groan. But we could handle an $18 trillion national debt if we set our mind to it. But if the national debt is really $90 trillion, which what John Williams claims, that works out to about $275,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. Family of four, your fair share would be over $1 million. You don't have it. I mean, the average American family of four does not have $1 million in assets. There's no way that the $90 trillion can be repaid. There is no way. It is not possible. And if we go on and we consider what the Congressional Budget Office said and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff when they were talking about including unfunded liabilities for Medicare and Social Security and whatever else they've got up there at Washington, it goes over $200 trillion. That works out to about $700,000 in debt for every man, woman, and child in this country. There is no way you can squeeze $700,000 out of the vast majority of the American people, each of the American people. It just isn't going to happen. Can't be done. Won't happen. And as I've said for years, what that means is that the total national debt can't be paid. That means it won't be paid. And the reason that's significant is because one man's debt is another man's asset. If I borrow $1,000 from Melody and I send her a piece of paper with an IOU on it, she's going to treat that IOU as an asset. But the truth is, it's just an IOU. It's not really an asset. An ounce of gold is an asset. A piece of paper with a signature is nothing but a promise to pay. It's not a payment. And for every dollar's worth of debt that's in the national debt, there are bonds out there that are worth as that debt. And if that debt can't be paid to the extent it can't, it means those bonds are, the correlative number of bonds are also worthless. So let's suppose that the national debt really is $90 trillion. And I believe John Williams is probably on the ball. He's not including unfunded liabilities, but I would trust him more than the federal government. Let's suppose it's $90 trillion. I don't think they can get more than 10, 20% maximum. I don't think they can pay more than 10 to 20% of that debt. I think 80% of that debt has to be wiped out, and that translates into something like $70 trillion. Huh? It's going to disappear. That much debt can't be paid. Therefore, the debt is so great that 80 to 90% of the debt, in my judgment, can't be paid. It therefore won't be paid. It means that a correlative amount of paper assets are going to be wiped out and shown to be worthless. And what that tells me although I don't know the date this is going to happen, it tells me that you got to be crazy to be storing your wealth in a paper format. There is going to be a moment where that's going to be admitted, oh my gosh, we can't pay the debts. And when that happens, everybody who's holding a treasury bond is going to sit back and lose their assets. They're going to lose them. Oh, they might get 10, 20% out of it, in my judgment, but they're going to lose 50% for sure, and probably 80 and maybe even 90% of their wealth that they've stored in paper treasuries. And I'm willing to bet that the same thing will translate into the stocks. And if you've got your money in paper, you're going to lose your assets because the debt is too great to be repaid. And every one of those paper assets, the stock, the bond, every one of them, they are promises to be paid in a world where the debt is so enormous that the promises can't be kept. So what do? You got to get out of paper. You got to run from them, in my opinion. And you've got to grab onto something tangible. If you want to buy land, you can buy land. If you want to buy guns, if you want to buy food, if you want to buy bullets, if you want to buy gold and silver, you've got to get into something tangible. For me, it may not be all that simple to explain it to people, but it's not that complex when you look at the logic of it from my perspective. The debt can't be paid. It's too big. That means that correlative assets, paper assets, are going to be wiped out and worthless. That means you don't want your money in paper assets. You want your money in something tangible like gold and silver. And you can buy the land. It'll preserve your wealth. And the guns probably, and the bullets and food and all the rest of that sort of thing. But if you want something that's going to be liquid during what might be difficult times ahead, in other words, something that you can go out and spend, you can't just take a deed down, go down to the grocery store and take a deed to 10 acres of land you own. Say, well, I'd like to buy some groceries, and I've got a deed here to 10 acres or 1 acre or a quarter acre or whatever. It's not going to be liquid. If you're going to buy the land, you buy it to sit on it until the economic debacle is pretty much finished. And then at that point, you come out of your hidey hole, and you sell the land, and you have some money now, and you can go out and but you can't do it easily during the debacle, all right? During the real, if it goes badly, you can't do it. But gold and silver, it's liquid. You can get to the grocery store. You can cut deals.
And right? I'm not
you get
even
gold
sure.
coins, silver coins. You can cut them. It's going to be a lot more useful, perhaps, than any land or other tangible investment you're likely to
get. Yeah, I'm not so sure land will perform like gold, because I don't think the mass amount of folks running to something safe will be land. It will be gold.
So your land might give
you something. You might not lose your land, but it's not going to give you the performance that gold will.
That's probably true.
Or silver. And what's interesting is, you know, you mentioned and you're talking about holding paper assets. Well, you know, the majority of the people in this country, when we go back to the question earlier for Murray about why more people are buying silver than gold, you have this massive amount of funds in these markets. They're all holding paper.
Yep.
And not one of them, and it doesn't matter how much money they have, not one of them understands debt. Not one of them truly understands the amount of debt that this country carries. And because they just, I mean, no one's in the, we've never had a bad day in this country. And we've gone through bad times, and we go through them, and we come out, and people relate to those stock markets, not just here in this country, but around the world, the European markets, China, the Asian markets. And it's really amazing that there is that much connection to these markets that dictates the condition of this world.
The perception of the condition of this world.
It's fascinating. It's amazing. It's stupid. But it is. And so you look at these markets making all-time highs, all records, just like today. I was telling Al earlier, I was talking to a person. He said, oh, yeah, I bought gold about a couple of years ago. my wife and my financial planner allowed me to play with a few funds just to shut me up, and I immediately lost 25%. And I was going to go on and just explain, you know, it will. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it because their faith, their livelihood is all based on this financial planner telling them how, you know, and these are retired people.
Well, in this instance, he was right. You know, the financial planner, it appears to be right. But
it wasn't right.
What I'm getting to, within the time context of 2 years, it appears that
he would have said that when gold was, you know, in the collapse of the financial
in 2009.
He's
not really dealing
09.
With fundamentals, in my opinion.
He doesn't make any money selling gold, period.
Yeah, I understand that. There's no point to running a business that sells gold if you don't get paid to sell gold.
Why would he run? I mean, they get paid by managing billions of dollars. So they're certainly not going to lose, you know, they don't want to lose anybody's money to gold.
Well, and that's another thing we've talked about a little in the past. One of the problems that investment gurus kind of run into with gold is people invest in it, invest to hold it. They don't generally buy gold today with the idea that I think I can sell it this afternoon and make, you know, a buck and a half an ounce off the deal.
I'm not going to trade.
Now, I know some people do, but physical gold. They're doing that paper gold. They're speculating all the time how they can make a fast buck. But people buy physical gold. They pay their money. They take the physical gold and they bury it in the backyard, put it in a vault, whatever they do with it. But they don't tend to sell it. Unlike paper stocks, where if I were a stockbroker, I can persuade you to buy a particular stock today, and a month from now, I can persuade you to buy another stock, and a month after that, I can persuade you
exactly.
to sell the first stock to buy a third stock, and I get a commission every time you make a move. With gold, you make one move, and you tend to sit on it for several years. And all by itself, that doesn't generate much in the line of commissions for the gurus. And so, therefore, they can't make a buck off of it. They're not going to recommend it. That's part of the problem.
That is part of the problem. And so it's just,
You know, the point behind all of it, again, the debt is too great to be repaid. One man's debt is another man's asset. But the guy is holding that piece of paper and he says, hey, I've got I got a treasury bond here worth $100,000. And I'm a wealthy guy because I got pieces of paper. You have nothing but promises to pay. You have not been paid in a real asset. All you have is a promise to pay in a world where 80 or 90% of the promises can't be kept. It's true, you may have a stock or a bond where the promise will be kept for you, but odds are you are going to lose your assets if you stay in paper. And that's why I sit here and talk about gold. It's not because it's metal, not because it's shiny, not because it's yellow. Right? It's because the paper is going to dissolve like toilet paper. All those paper debt instruments. I can't say when it's going to happen. It could happen in the next several weeks. It might not happen for the next several years. I don't know. No one else does either. All right? But the day is coming when someone's going to have to admit we can't pay the debt. And when it happens, they don't just wipe out the debt, they wipe out the correlative assets, and that is the danger in owning paper. Let's take another break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Here's an article from, what is this, Associated Press, Japan Household Spending, no, it was Ms. Shedlock, excuse me. Japan Household Spending down 4%, Consumer Price Index drops to 0.9%, bankruptcies soar and yen collapse. In spite of the yen falling 35% since 2011, we're talking about 11, 12% per year for 3 years inflation. Japan once again borders on deflation. Japanese core inflation last month fell below 1% to a 13-month low just weeks before Prime Minister Shinzo Abe heads to the polls to garner fresh support to push back a scheduled rise in sales taxes. And they go through this, and what are the most important part of this? Is that first of all, Japan has been fighting deflation for 20 years. And it's the reason they have gone from a skyrocketing economy from post-World War II on up to through the 80s, much of the 80s. They were just almost incredible. They thought they were perfect and they were, you know, technologically brilliant and put out great products, and they still do in some regard, but they're no longer innovative in the same way they were. They have become trapped in deflation, and it's a very difficult thing. Once you get into deflation, very difficult to persuade people to spend money once they believe that deflation will continue. And this is the great danger in deflation, because in deflation, your currency becomes more valuable. It buys more. If you could buy, for example, when we talk about crude oil, 6 months ago, it might cost you $105 to buy a barrel of crude oil. Not even 6 months ago. Today, it's going to cost you $65, thereabouts, maybe $70. It doesn't just mean that the price of crude oil is down. It means that the purchasing power of the dollar is up. This is evidence of deflation. This is what put Japan in a condition of stagnation for 20 years now. All right? Deflation. And it's not easily escaped once it's established. Because people realize I could buy a barrel of oil for $105 today, but 6 months from now, I could maybe get a barrel of crude oil for $70. Well, that's a heck of a deal. All I got to do is wait 6 months, and I can get my crude oil for $70 instead of $105. I'm making a savings. So people tend not to spend during a period of deflation. During a period of inflation, people intend to spend because they know their dollar is going to buy less. They know prices are rising. The dollar's value is falling. Their deal then, they understand the during a time of inflation, you dump the dollar as fast as you can. You don't save. All right? Because it'll be worth less if you hang on to that dollar long enough. We've seen the value of the dollar, the purchasing power of the dollar, fall by 95% over the course of the last, since 1971, 40 years. Lost 95%, maybe a little bit more. Knowing that discourages people from savings because they know their savings are going to be wiped out by inflation. But deflation says, hey, wait, savings are smart. But if you're saving, you're not spending, that means the guy down the street who's selling pizzas, he's not going to be able to sell as many pizzas. That means he lays off a couple of waitresses, he lays off a cook or two. Now we have rising unemployment. The other piece of places, in order to try to stay solvent, just fighting for survival, they lower prices. And then they lower prices in order to compete. The guy down the street, he lowers prices in order to compete. Prices fall further. We have more deflation, more unemployment. A number of bad things happen when we get caught in this state of deflation. And Japan has been there for the last 20 years. And even though they've managed to cause 35% inflation since 2011, they are still back in or near deflation. Now, there's another article here from the Associated Press, and that the headline there is "Deflation Looms as Europe's Economic Bugbear." And the article is simply telling us some of the strategies that will be attempted by the European Central Bank to prevent deflation. All right? They're trying to cause inflation as the antidote to deflation. Now, whether they'll succeed or not is unknown, but the point is Europe, like Japan, is threatened by deflation. Then you can go down into this country, and we also see, I just had an ad we talked about yesterday's program. An outfit is selling guns, AR-15s, prices down $125, $150, I don't recall, per rifle, all right? That's evidence of deflation. Price of gold, down. Evidence of deflation. Price of gasoline, down. Evidence of deflation. It doesn't mean that we are definitely in an era of deflation, because there are other inflationary forces. There's always a teeter-totter effect. There's both of them. There's always some inflation and some deflation, but which is predominant? That's the question. Deflation, I'm not going to argue that it's predominant in this country yet, but it's certainly getting traction. A year ago, nobody even talked about it. Today, it's in the news almost every day. We talk about deflation. The whole idea behind quantitative easing since 2008 was to prevent deflation. They'd print $4 trillion worth of cash that was supposed to be distributed to the people. They lowered interest rates, which was supposed to help inflation and help encourage people to borrow money. They are doing what they've done to prevent deflation, and yet we see evidence of it in the United States. We see undeniable evidence of it in Japan. We see growing evidence of it in Europe. And what it tells us is that the whole world is facing an episode of deflation. Maybe we go into it deeply, maybe we don't go into it deeply. It remains to be seen, but we're facing it. It's close right now. And deflation is always a harbinger of economic depression. People refuse to spend because they know they can get a better deal 6 months from now than they can today. Because prices are going down. People save and they save and they save more. And the net result is the economy just cools. People lose their jobs. Corporations go bankrupt because they can't make enough sales. Profits are diminished. Tax revenues for the government is diminished. We are sitting on the verge of that globally right now. Can't say it's going to happen, but it might. The problem with deflation, one of the problems and one of the great questions and mysteries, is that, well, one of the, oh, a motto, a mantra for economists during the Great Depression is that cash, the motto was cash is king. Meaning that if you had a little cash and you were willing to spend it, you could get some great deals. You could buy homes, you could buy land, you could buy cars, and just spectacular deals compared to what had been possible just a few years earlier. All right? Deflation, if you had any cash, and if you were willing to spend it, you were king. The cash was king. And a lot of people are sitting back right now and they're saying, listen, let's store our money in cash right now because cash will be king. If we're going into a period of deflation again, maybe an economic depression, we want to have all the cash on hand we possibly can. Well, that's true, but there's a difference between today's cash and the cash that was there during the Great Depression. And the difference is that all of the cash during the Great Depression was backed by gold or silver. Great Depression, in retrospect, we say it started in 1929. We still had gold certificates, and gold was used. It was in circulation in the economy until 1933, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt pulled it out of circulation. The cash that was king, at least all of the gold certificates from 1929 to 1933, the cash that was king was not paper. It was physical gold. That was the cash that was king. People were dealing with paper, but the paper was still redeemable for gold. And even after they shut the gold down, they took the gold out of circulation in 1933, silver remained in circulation until 1968. And the point I'm trying to get across is that the cash that was king during the Great Depression was gold from 1929 to 1933 and silver from 1929 all the way on up to 1968. The cash during the Great Depression, contrary to the way people remember it and see it, the cash was not paper. It was gold and silver. Gold and silver were king during the Great Depression. Now, a lot of people are sitting down and they say, well, we'll take a paper $100 bill today and it'll be just like a paper $100 bill was back during the Great Depression. It was a lot of money and we'll stack up a bunch of paper dollar bills and we'll get rich. Well, maybe. But I don't think so. I believe that the cash that will be king during the next depression, if there's going to be one, will be the same cash that was king during the previous Great Depression. I think it's going to be gold and silver. There'll be, we've seen the value of the dollar go up for a while. It's had a hot run for the last couple of months. But I don't think that can be sustained. I know every country in the world believes that inflation is the way to stimulate your economy. Unless the government wants an economic collapse, that tells me that the government wants to recreate inflation in this country, just as Japan is trying to create inflation in their country, and Europe is trying to create inflation in that region, and the United States needs inflation to re-stimulate the economy. Unless they're willing to go into the depression, and who can say? Unless they want to go into it, they've got to push back into inflation. If they do, gold and silver are going to gain in value, and the paper is going to lose. So the mystery, the big question, which cash will be king in the context of another a great or greater depression? Will it just be paper, or will it be gold and silver coins? I believe it'll be gold and silver just as it was during the Great Depression. And so, this is just another one of my rationales. I'm sitting back and I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm doing what I'm talking to you about. And I can't tell anyone that I'm not, that I'm giving you God's truth. But I'm telling you, I'm doing what I'm talking about. I'm living by the ideas I'm trying to communicate on this program. And I'm not just I'm not just doing a pitch here. I'm trying to tell you, this is why I think gold and silver are reasonable, rational, important, viable. Yeah. I think you got to do it. The logic of the situation pretty much screams that to me. So in any case, it does look as if we are headed into a depression. If you can judge from what we see happening in Japan and what's happening in Europe and what's happening in the United States, and insofar as we see evidence of deflation, unless something extraordinary takes place in a relatively short period of time, something extraordinary that's sufficient to rekindle significant inflation in Europe, significant inflation in the United States, unless we see that happen, I think we're going into that depression. And in the context of that depression, I believe gold and silver will be the cash that will be king. But certainly, any savings will be king. Right? If you can figure out how to save your wealth, you're going to have an opportunity to make some spectacular buys in the event that we go into another depression. Which brings me back, though, to this idea of the debt being too big to be repaid. And as a result, the paper debt instruments that memorialize gold, that piece of paper says, I have a $100,000 treasury note, a treasury bond, and I'm wealthy. And I'm saying, no, you're not. You haven't really saved your wealth. You have nothing but a promise to pay. If you're storing your wealth in a form of paper, if it's a bank account, if it's stocks, if it's bonds, if it's any form of paper, what you have is not a payment. You have a promise to pay in a world where the debt is so great that the promises can't be kept, which again tells me whatever's going on here, whether we're going into inflation or deflation, the debt is so great that if you're going to hang around in paper, you're going to lose your assets. On the other hand, if you're going to store your wealth in the form of something tangible like gold and silver, you are going to do the best for yourself that is likely to be done. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's you.